I am very pleased to have with me in the studio Roger Grivey. Roger has a longtime association with WGTE. I just want to thank you for coming and making the time to talk to us today.
It's great to be here, Brett.
If you could talk a little bit about your past and your history with WGTE, because I know you spent most of your time on the mic, but you also did some administrative duties.
That's right, yeah. Started in March of 1976, preparing to go on the air, and yeah. We worked collectively, Phil Williams and Bill Engelke and me, built the music library and prepared to go on air, which we did in early May of 76.
Let's take you back to early May of 76 and your first day here at WGTE. What can you tell us about that, if you remember anything from that experience?
Well, as I mentioned, it started about 6 weeks before that when yeah. We got together as a staff for the first time, and we didn't have a music library. Phil Williams and Marianne Costarelli asked around and got donations from record companies. We typed out individual index cards for each album, yeah. Came each song on each album with the composer name and the duration of it and the piece. And then we started practicing. The studios were being built simultaneously, and Bill started practicing his morning air and Phil in the afternoon. I stayed late after a while, stayed in the evening, because Tom Payne, the general manager, wanted us to sound on day one like we'd been on the air for years.
So you practiced.
We did. We ran a complete, we hit the net and came back out and ran all the shows and got used to the studio, which was built by Alan Caldwell and Art Hafer and the engineering team. They did a wonderful job with that. And then when it came time to actually go on the air on May 2nd, I think it was, 1976, yeah. It was very familiar and acted like we'd been there a while, because we had.
Well, when you think about the present and WGTE at 50, looking at the past, what's the first image or sound that comes to mind for you?
The consistency of it all. It's been great over a half a century to have this amazing resource for Northwest Ohio, for based in classical music and classical music at its heart, but still a reliable source of information about the arts and news and things like that, that has been part of Toledoans' lives, Northwest Ohio, West Central Ohio, spreading out a little bit, for now half a century. It's great to have been part of the beginning of it, yeah. And it's so nice to hear it now at home and driving around. So everybody on air now sounds great. You've done an amazing job in keeping things going and keeping it in the minds of people in Northwest Ohio and Southeast Michigan.
Well, some things never change, but the role of the broadcaster has changed in the last 50 years.
Oh, a lot.
I wonder if you can talk about that for us.
Yeah, we were totally analog. We had only LPs. No CDs were out until our sixth year of being on the air. And we were only on the air from 6 in the morning till 1 the following morning. Between 1 a.m. and 6 a.m., we were off the air. Bill Engelke would turn on the transmitter every morning at a few minutes before 6 with bird songs, and I'd turn it off every night with cricket noises at 1 a.m. So that was a big difference. And in between, we had an amazing array of community volunteers, much like you do now with Jazz Spectrum and things. That started back then. With jazz hosts coming in, I produced a nightly jazz show with Art Edgerton and Candy Johnson 5 nights a week. Wow. And then other people came in, like Ray Heitner from the Cakewalkin Jazz Band. Other community contributors, Jim Metzler for the organ show, Honora Sue Carr did great sacred music. These volunteers were absolutely essential to establishing the sound of FM 91, and my heart goes out to them still. They were a great group of people that did it out of love of the music that they specialized in.
You've talked briefly about this, but what were some of the other people that you associated with who really helped shape the station's identity and sound?
Well, there were three of us that did the tour of the classical music announcing. Bill Engelke was on in the morning. He went from 6 a.m. until 10 or 11. I can't remember which. And then Phil Williams took over at between 1 and 5. And then we had All Things Considered started at 5. And then my show was starting at 9:30, 10 o'clock at night and went till 1 in the morning. So I was a lot younger than 50 years younger than, as a matter of fact. So I could stay up late. I can't imagine being on the air at 1 in the morning. No, but anyway, the three of us handled the most of the classical music. And then others, weekend hosts came in, and then the specialty hosts for jazz and for organ music and new music, things like that. They gradually filled in everything else. Then Barbara Dlawacki was the news director. Essie Hobgood announced a nightly show called All Things in Toledo. We cut in for between... I think it was 5:07 to 5:30 every night, taking up the last few minutes of All Things Considered with Toledo News. It was a local Toledo broadcast. There was a local news broadcast every day at noon, produced by Barbara Dlawacki, and she announced that one. We did stock reports for the local Fortune 500 companies that were still located in Toledo, things like that. So it was great to just be able to provide that information as well as that artistic enrichment.
Did you or can you tell us any stories either in front of the mic or behind it that went on that was something that surprised you that you didn't necessarily plan for? Any moments on air or behind the mic?
Every Wednesday night I took requests.
Okay.
And I had... It started at, again, around 10 o'clock, and the phones lit up, and I answered the phones live while juggling the LPs, and usually had a copy of the Pachelbel Canon and 1812 Overture on standby because I knew they'd come in as requests. But there was one gentleman whose total love of classical music was centered not on the three Bs, Bach, Beethoven, and Brahms, but his were the three Ss. They were Johann Strauss, Von Suppe, and John Philip Sousa. That was his entire happy place for classical music, and he'd call in and request one of those three every single week and didn't like to hear anything else. It was fun to get to know the regular listeners when we did public appearances, as you do now. It is so gratifying. Some people that are now of a certain age still remember those early days, and it's strange how still get stopped every now and then, and people mention that they listen. And it's very gratifying to know that we had an impact.
Yeah, what role do you think public media does for the community now that it maybe didn't do 50 years ago?
That's a great question. The options were so limited then. There was no streaming of anything. TV channels were... Cable was barely existing, so there was no cultural offerings there. We had the three networks plus PBS, and that was about it. So we did fill a broader gap in the community than anybody does now. Mm-hmm. Nobody has the dominance in a slice of the media pie that they did 50 years ago. It's just the nature of technology and society evolving. But for the classical music end of it, it was great. WUOM was still all Michigan Public, they're called now. They're all talk and news. They used to have classical music, as we did, but it was hard to pick up WUOM. Their antennas were situated so that it was difficult to get the signal. So after May of 76, when we came on the air, all of a sudden, people in Toledo and then Lima and then Defiance and Bryan were able to hear full fidelity classical music for a good part of their day, which was great.
We're in the new building. I say new, but it was really made many years ago. But that was still after your time here, so it's a different building, right?
Yes, we broadcast out of two different studios, one in downtown Toledo next to the Valentine Theater. It was the fourth floor of the Willard Hotel. And there were hotel rooms, so that some of the offices still had bathrooms and showers in them. It was that recent, and we had Willard Hotel wastebaskets in our offices. Then we moved to Huron Street, the former home of Channel 13. At that point, they just switched over to being WTVG from WSPD-TV, and we took over their studios. And from there, everybody moved here. So it was at that FM 91 studio on St. Clair Street that I was on both in the evening, and then after a few years, I switched to the afternoons when Phil Williams left.
What do you think about our current building as compared to where you started?
It is beautiful. The studios are flexible and delightful. You have a public space. I know, but my wife plays in the symphony. They rehearse here in one of their big rooms. It's a great place, and it sounds wonderful. The technology is such that it was built for this area, so it's great. And by the way, speaking of my wife, here's another story. In that old studio, in the spring of 1982, we'd been on the air for 6 years, I had a series of interviews, much like you do with the symphony. I decided to interview principal players of the symphony and invited them to bring their own records down and be a guest DJ for the afternoon for classical music. And I interviewed principal players, and one of the people I interviewed was the fairly new principal harpist in town. And that's how Nancy Linderman and I met, and we've been married for 38 years.
Well, that's an interesting story. I mean, what does WGTE, what did it give you personally beyond just a career? I mean, how has it shaped you over the years?
Oh, that's another great question. Brad, you're good at this. Well, growing up in Maumee and graduating from Maumee High School and loving classical music and then going away to school and getting a music degree and then a second music degree, it was great to be able to sort of mix all that together and give back to the community. And trying to pull in WUOM on a weak signal. And even when I was a boy, there was a WMHE had a classical music show on at night that I would listen to all the time, but it wasn't very often. So being a local person, as Bill Engelke was, to be able to give back to the community was so gratifying, and it remains so. That looking back on it and having had other parts of my career that have continued from there, that time when I was 22 years old and on the radio and giving back to my own community, it's immensely gratifying.
So what do you hold most important when you think of those moments? What are you most proud of, your time behind the microphone at WGTE?
Doing my best in my own 22-year-old way to broaden the perspective, staying within classical music, but then putting it in perspective. Renaissance music, medieval music, a lot of it, the dances and everything, they're just a house band. They're basically like Glenn Miller sitting in a corner while people are dancing. Mozart Divertimenti, the same way. It was supposed to be background music, but it's played on orchestral instruments. It's old, therefore it's classical music now. But being able to point out that like performers, there's a direct through line from Paganini to Art Tatum to Jimi Hendrix to Jacob Collier.
Yeah.
The amazing, the people who thought they're possessed by the devil, they're so good. And we intersect with that in classical music quite a bit. So that was fun to do, to stretch it a little bit. And Phil was very supportive of that as I did that. To play older music and some newer music mixed in with the period of common practice, which is, you know, the standard classical music that we all hear.
Let me ask you what advice you would give to the next generation of broadcasters.
Well, take note of what's going on around you, and then somehow inculcate all that into what you present as a product. There's so many different influences now, and so many sources of good music that you can pick and choose from. Streaming services, independent labels, things like that. We just did not have that. We had RCA, and we had Columbia Records, and we had Musical Heritage Society, and that very, very few channels for this music. But now there's many, many more than we ever had. So it's up to the broadcasters to broaden their own horizons a bit and seek out new artists that may be performing beautifully and present them, much like you do every day. It's so impressive when I drive around listening at home to hear the variety of music that FM 91 now presents.
As WGTE-FM celebrates our 50th anniversary, maybe you can talk about what you hope would happen over the next 50 years at WGTE.
Right now, we have 50 more years worth of music to deal with than we did when we signed on, which is an interesting concept. Yeah. Everything written after 1976 is now fair game for a performance. You will have 100 years worth of music then to choose from. And some of it is bound to be spectacular.
Yeah.
So that's something that I fully plan on staying around for another 50 years and hearing all of it. But it's exciting to think about, to think that there would be different ways of communicating. Right now, the streaming service didn't have it before, and now you do. You can listen to it on any portable device you carry around.
Yeah,
it's delightful, and there will be more of that. It might be built into hearing aids, for instance, as people would have it just as a button to push, and bang, you've got FM 91. So
nice.
Who knows?
Nice. And finally, what does WGTE at 50 mean to you in a sentence or two? Let's say you got in front of the microphone again. What would you say to listeners about this station?
Thank you. The listeners have been there for 50 years. They've been supporting the station. Thank you. It's one of those things that it's a cooperative effort. Everybody here provides a really great product, and people at home consume the product, like it, and they contribute for its continuance. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you for spending some time with us here on Afternoon Classics. As we approach our 50th anniversary, Roger Grivey, I want to thank you. You were here from the beginning, from before the beginning, actually, and stayed here for a good long time. So it's great to talk with you about lots of stuff that I didn't know. It was interesting hearing all those names and things. So anyway, thank you for appearing on FM 91.
Thank you, Brad.